Hey everyone, it's Jamison Cable of the Land Between the Meadows Kentucky History Podcast. I just want to say thank you for your support and listening to this episode. For all the updates on our podcast and YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kentucky History Channel, like and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at KY History Pod. If you're enjoying the podcast, give us a good rating and review on Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform that you're listening to. If you're looking for ways to support the podcast, an easy and simple way is to share it on Facebook or any other social media and tell your friends. You can also go to audibletrial.com/KYHistoryPod and get a free book of your choice. And finally, you can visit patreon.com/KYHistoryPod if you want extra content from us. If you're already a patron, thank you for your support. It means so much to us. All the links I've mentioned are in the description of the podcast, so go check them out. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoy this episode. And remember, if it's not about Kentucky, it ain't worth a hill of beans.
John C. Brackenridge was a handsome man. They said he had eyes as blue as the blue ocean, and when he looked at you, he could see deep down in your soul. When John C. Brackenridge talked, people listened. At this particular time, John C. Brackenridge was asked to give a eulogy for 100 Kentucky soldiers who had died in the American-Mexican War. John C. Brackenridge, a major in the U.S. Army at this time, was asked to take 1,000 Kentuckians, volunteers, to fight the war in Mexico. When he got there, the war had just ended, and his troops contracted yellow fever, in which 100 of them died. They employed Breckinridge and his Kentuckians to guard Mexico City as kind of an occupation force after the war, after the surrender of Mexico, and that he did. But when he returned in the Lexington Cemetery, where they had put a statue for these 100 men, they asked him to give the eulogy. People said the eulogy was so good that when he spoke, bold men cried. It was so personal and effective. One particular man who was there, Theodore O'Hara, who lived in Danville, Kentucky, slowly rode his horse and buggy on the dirt roads back the 35-mile trip to Danville after John C. Breckinridge's talk, and thought about his words. He thought about it as he clopped over covered bridges over the Kentucky River and then later on across the Dix. And when he got home, he wrote a poem that has been eulogized in many ways, Bivouac of the Dead, it is called. The muffled drum's sad roll has beat the soldier's last tattoo. No more on life's parade shall meet the brave and fallen few. On fame's eternal campground, their silent tents are spread, and glory guards with solemn round the bivouac of the dead. Rest on embalmed and saint dead, dear as the blood ye gave. No impious footstep here shall tread the herbage of your grave. Your own proud land's heroic soil must be your filter grave. She claims from war his richest spoil, the ashes of the brave. No rumor of the foe's advance now sweeps upon the wind. No troubled thought at midnight haunts of loved ones left behind. The nine troop, the flashing blade, the bugle's stirring blast, the charge, the dreadful cannonade, the din and shout are past. That was written by Theodore O'Hare. Theodore O'Hare was another interesting Kentuckian from Danville, Kentucky. He was a poet, and he later on joined in the war between the states on the Confederate side and became a Confederate colonel. had a brave review throughout the war. In his words of, were taken many of these in elegies put on monuments and graves all over the country, and excerpts from this poem, The Bivouac of the Dead. It even had a marker over the head of the arch as you go into Arlington Cemetery, Arlington National Cemetery. Had quotes from Theodore O'Hare from Bivouac of the Dead. And yet, in recent times and in times past, when people learned that he was a Confederate colonel, they began to erase his name off monuments and statues all over the country, just because of his past, not on his words. And I've always thought that literature should be based on what it is, you know, not necessarily who wrote it, but you know, because he was a Confederate, even though they liked his words and he wasn't necessarily talking about either side, just people who fought in wars and died, that they thought it was shameful that, you know, that his words should be used on public places, and have erased a whole lot of them from the 25 or 35 that used to exist are now gone. So, you know, Jameson, I can understand, you know, today's problems and, you know, with the Confederate flag and the offensiveness that it serves for some people. And I can also understand, you know, paying homage to, you know, many Confederate generals and how that, you know, in our society today, we're taking those down, many of them, and replacing them. John C. Breckinridge had a statue on Cheapside in Fayette County along with John Hunt Morgan, and both of those have been removed and taken out to the Lexington Cemetery and are posted there by his grave. But today, you know, I kind of wanted to look a little bit at John C. Breckinridge and who he was, because he was a great Kentuckian. And it's interesting, you know, when we talk about history, you know, it's like history, the flavor of the moment. And you know how we were talking about John Fee the last time we got together and what a great Kentuckian. And we were talking about whether we want Dolly Parton or John Fee's statue put up in the Capitol, you know. John C. Breckinridge is also a great Kentuckian who's served his state and country. But he is not the flavor of the time. He is not someone that people are going to be interested in or worship like you would John Fee because of his stance on abolitionism. John C. Breckinridge was a very prominent Kentuckian born in Lexington. He served in the United States military. He worked and was elected in both houses of the Kentucky legislature. He was elected Vice President of the United States. I believe it was from 1857 to 1861, something in that neighborhood. He was very popular throughout the country. He was very popular in the South. His political policies were that he believed in states' rights. He believed that states should have their own decision about slavery. He actually belonged to a couple of rather abolitionist-type groups. So he owned five slaves himself. He was, like I said, prominent with men like Henry Clay, and you know, Henry Clay's son was lost in the Mexican-American War and was at that eulogy that John C. Breckinridge gave, along with Theodore O'Hare.
Well, Mr. Pope, you talk about John C. Breckinridge, and I would think many Kentuckians know the basis about him. And you talk about Theodore O'Hare, and you kind of, and then we talk about present times and how Theodore's words were taken away, and it becomes a very, you could call it a slippery slope or however you want to define it, but it's very tough, and it's, you say, the flavor of the times, how to decide on, you know, what monument to take down, or who's honorable, and you know, as history history is written, I guess you kind of sometimes wonder, you know, which way is the right path, or which way is, or how to define what to do, because people are going to disagree either way.
Absolutely. What's amazing is how history changes. And what we look at, one person we have as a hero, we build statues to him. The next day, we're tearing it down, you know, and maybe putting new people up that were obscure.
Yeah, and like I know people, myself included, you know, was very, you know, I was very much for Jefferson Davis being removed from the rotunda. But then people bring up the topic with the idea, well, you know, George Washington owned slaves, or you know, and the list goes on and on. Do we take down all the statues of anybody who's ever owned a slave? Because then we're going to be very statue.
There won't be anyone left.
And then, you know, people argue as well. Is it the, are you erasing history? Which I don't find it that way. Isn't you're erasing the history just because you take somebody's statue down? But I do understand your point too about O'Hara's words. You know, words are words.
I do think we're erasing history.
You know. Yeah.
By taking the statues down. I disagree with you.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're reinterpreting history and changing it.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you don't think of history, you think of something solid and non-moving, but actually history is fluid, and it's how we interpret it.
Yeah. As you discover more points of view, more...
Right, as society feels differently about things.
Yeah.
Breckinridge, you know, he was born near Lexington, Kentucky, and he died and was buried in the Lexington Cemetery. He was from a prominent family. The Breckinridge name is just incredibly huge in Kentucky history. And as I said, he served as a non-combatant in the Mexican-American War because when he got there, the war had just ended, but he was put in. He was a Democrat. He was elected as a Democrat to the Kentucky House of representatives, and he was the first Democrat in Kentucky history to be elected to a national position, you know, where he served as vice president.
Who was the president that he was
I think
under?
Buchanan.
Buchanan, okay.
I'll tell you, you know, just a little bit about it. He was allied with Stephen Douglas in support of the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And after, you know, he was kind of reappointed in 1854, he made his reelection unlikely. And he decided he wouldn't run anymore for public office at that time. But then he was nominated for vice president in 1856, and it was because with James Buchanan. But it was kind of an odd thing. It was like people do today. You know, Breckinridge was so popular in the South, and because the other candidates were kind of so-so, they thought that Breckinridge would do a better job winning the election, and he did. And as a matter of fact, he was the first vice president that ever campaigned. He campaigned in St. Louis. Most of them just sat at home, like in Kentucky.
Yeah.
He went to St. Louis. He went to Madison, Wisconsin. He went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., and all over the South campaigning for president. He really worked at it. He was an eloquent speaker. People would just, you know, like Clay, would just stop and just love to hear him talk. And he was a lawyer. He was very persuasive. And, of course, the Democrats won the election, but Breckinridge had very little influence with Buchanan as vice president. As there was kind of a rift between the two, Buchanan, he joined Buchanan because he was pro-slavery. but it split the Democratic Party, Breckinridge did. There was Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats after that. So anyway, after the Southern Democrats walked out of the 1860 National Convention in Baltimore, you know, they set up their own team and they won the election. And as soon as Breckinridge's term ended in 1861, he joined the Confederacy. He actually, as the history book said, fled the Union lines.
Yeah.
And the United States Senate voted to excommunicate him.
Wow.
From the Senate because he joined the Confederate Army. You know, he was involved in a number of Civil War battles. It's just unbelievable. You know, Shiloh was one of the big ones for him. And after Shiloh, he performed so well that he was promoted to be a major general.
Wow.
In the Confederacy. And part of the Battle of Shiloh that's really interesting is that Bragg became in charge of it after Johnson was killed. And Bragg, at 6 o'clock, the whole idea was for the Confederate Army to push the Union back to Pittsburgh Landing, to the river, and push them right into the river. And at 6 o'clock, Breckinridge, who was commander of what they call the Kentucky Orphan Brigade, You know, he was so doing such a good job and losing tons of men, but he had the Yankees on the run. And at 6 o'clock, Bragg said, stop.
Yeah.
He said, let's quit fighting. And Breckinridge had him in the death hold.
Yeah.
And Breckinridge and Bragg never got along. Mm-hmm. And Bragg was always...
Wasn't Bragg
a little... He was a real jerk. He was a jerk. He really was. Nobody liked him. And even the men kept encouraging Breckinridge to resign and challenge Bragg to a duel.
Uh-huh. But
as I said, just to give you an example, Breckinridge was in the Battle of Shiloh, the Battle of Baton Rouge, the Battle of Stones River, the Battle of Jackson, the Battle of Chickamauga, the Chattanooga Campaign, the Battle of New Market, Virginia, the Battle of Cold Harbor, the Battle of Piedmont, the Battle of Lynchburg, the Battle of Monocacy, the Battle of Bull's Gap, and the Battle of Marion. So, I mean, my goodness.
Yeah,
and then he became, and then in 1865, he was appointed by Jefferson Davis to be the Secretary of, I think, War, Secretary of War for the Confederacy, Secretary of the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw in 1865 that it was over. The Confederates were losing.
Yeah.
And Jefferson Davis didn't want to quit. Lee didn't want to quit at first. And it was Breckinridge who was the one that suggested to everyone that it's over and we need to start making rounds. And he was the treasurer of the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked them all into resigning.
Mm-hmm.
And not resigning, but surrendering to mm-hmm. the Union and healing the nation. So, you know, he was really, really instrumental in that
yeah.
and could see, you know, the situation very clearly. Breckinridge had a really interesting life, and when Breckinridge left the country mm-hmm. after the Civil War, I think he lived in Europe for 3 years.
Wow.
And after President Andrew Johnson extended amnesty to all former Confederates in 1868, Breckinridge came back. And everybody, he was so popular, everybody wanted him to run for office again, but he said no.
Yeah.
And he died in 1875 from wounds. He was under Lee's command, and he was told to charge his position. I'm not sure if it was the Battle of Cold Harbor. It was one of those Virginia battles. And a cannonball, believe it or not, hit his horse.
Wow.
While he was on it and killed his horse, blew his horse up, and the horse fell over on him.
Oh, yeah.
And crushed him, and soldiers had to come and get the horse off of him. And it impaired his legs. I guess he was paralyzed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny in a way. He couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And they sat him in a carriage, and like 2 weeks later, he still couldn't walk at all.
Yeah.
And Lee told him to take his carriage and lead the charge. He was like one of those old soldiers that would get right out in front, you know,
yeah.
and charge. And he charged in a carriage when he was unable to walk. And they said there was really nobody comparable, which I found interesting, on the battlefield to Breckinridge as far as military command mm-hmm. and understanding
wow.
and popularity with his troops.
Wow.
And he charged and led a successful charge riding his carriage in front of all the troops
mm-hmm.
when he couldn't even walk.
Yeah.
He was ordered by Lee to attack
wow.
on all fronts.
Wow. Get in there, bud.
I know. Isn't that something? I mean, that's amazing, his spirit.
Yeah. And then you got a soldier saying, hey, challenge old Bragg to a duel. Let's get in
there. That's right. He wrote a letter. And because Bragg would have him charge, you know, like positions that were just cross open fields where he knew the Kentuckians, mm-hmm. he commanded Kentuckians.
Yeah.
And he knew that they would just be slaughtered, like 65% of his regiment would
yeah.
be wiped out. And so he wrote a letter and he said, I'm going to lead him. I'm going to be right in the front. If I ask my men to go, I'm going to go too,
yeah.
you know.
Wow.
And he wrote a letter and gave it to his best friend and said that, you know, if he's killed, that he wants to know that this battle and this charge was not his doing and that
yeah.
Bragg was low life
yeah.
and an idiot, and that he wrote a long letter to his wife and to the country to let everybody know.
Yeah.
And he didn't think anything of Bragg. He thought he was just a total
yeah.
jerk.
I think it's
we won't be doing a podcast on Bragg. You know, even though we ought to do some on people we think are jerks
yeah.
in history, you know, give our view. I think that'd be good. We ought to think about it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, maybe we'll come up with one.
Yeah, yeah. But very colorful, you know.
Yeah.
Very brilliant man. You know, I have an antique business. We've talked about it. And one time, maybe 20 years ago or 25 mm-hmm. years ago, I got hold, and I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but I got hold of a Kentucky coin silver
yeah.
julep cup
uh-huh.
That was John C. Breckinridge, and it had his name on it.
Wow.
And I should have kept it. I sold it. I sold it. It was worth a lot of money. It would probably be worth a lot of money today. Yeah.
That's how antiques go. You hold on to them.
I know.
Of course, this has a lot of Civil War factors going in, and you talk. I find it the most interesting is that he seemed to be more on the states' rights issue. He was more for the Southern cause in that scene, which, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why the Civil War happened. Most importantly, I would definitely say slavery was the top issue.
It was.
But you know, when you get down to the individuals. Personally, they may have this or that or the other reason that it's going to be more complex. But generally, slavery was the top one.
Yeah.
When you get down to, say, Breckinridge, he was more states' rights. And I'm sure you get down to the soldiers of the Confederate, they may be fighting just for state pride, their home state. I'm from South Carolina, I'm going to fight for South Carolina. It's in the South. It gets a little bit more complex, I guess, individually. And that's the thing, I guess, people often, I'm sure listeners will have different opinions, and that's fine. Individually, we have a bit more, I don't want to say ideology, but thoughts on the issues. Even as today, there's the broad issues that are swept around.
Yeah.
But individually, it might not be the same. I'm from Kentucky, but I might not have the same views as every Kentuckian.
Right. It was interesting when he was in the U.S. Senate, what one of his main things was to help Kentucky farmers?
What's that?
Was to promote the hemp farmers.
Hey.
That was there you go. Yeah. He supported bills that benefited the district's hemp farmers.
Wow.
And wanted to set them up. He also sought to increase Kentucky's federal aid for the construction and maintenance of rivers and harbors in Kentucky. Kentucky River, Ohio River,
Those are all big, and you think about mid 1800s, those developments really helped the rural communities and so forth.
He was big buddies with Henry Clay, and when he was here in Lexington, they're both from Lexington, both prominent families, the Breckinridges and the Clays were equal. He would visit Henry Clay, and daily, and talk to him about things going on in the country. And as Henry Clay got sick and was dying in Lexington, he went to see him every day.
Uh-huh.
And when Henry Clay died, Breckinridge was chosen to deliver his eulogy in Congress when the next session commenced.
Wow.
So that just shows you what a gifted lawyer and speaker he was.
Henry Clay's wife, do you know?
I don't know much about Henry Clay's wife.
I was trying to think of, that's another book that I'm reading popping in my head. But the age difference. When was Breckinridge born?
Breckinridge, it's John K. Bell Breckinridge, was born in January 16th, 1821. Okay. And he died in 1875. Mm-hmm. And he died after a result of that horse falling on him, the complications of that.
Yeah.
His horse getting hit by a cannonball in his legs and so forth. And even though he was in Europe for 3 years, when he came back, he was in poor health and died.
Did he ever walk again? I think he did.
Okay, yeah,
he did. Get, okay. Yeah. Well, reason I ask, I was trying to get a comparison of Henry Clay's age compared to him.
Yes,
and he's obviously a lot younger.
Yes, he was younger.
Well, we've talked plenty of times about people who was for on the southern side and on the northern side, and it's just always kind of interesting. These people come in from the same place, but yet they'll be. Of course, obviously Henry Clay and him were both from Lexington. Did Henry Clay ever really? Did he ever say? I guess north or south or? I would think he would be southern.
Henry Clay. But that was his main problem. The question you're asking.
Yeah.
Henry Clay ran for president, I think, 3 times.
Yep.
And his problem was that he owned slaves, but he was kind of anti-slavery.
Yeah,
and the North didn't trust him because he owned slaves, and the South didn't trust him because he was an abolitionist to a certain extent, even though he himself owned slaves.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't popular in either place.
Mm-hmm.
So he really was just like Kentucky, in between.
Uh-huh.
He was just really in between, and it didn't go over well.
Yeah.
He was lukewarm to everybody, even though he was brilliant. He should have been president, and he would have made a great president.
Yeah. Well, and bringing this all back, because if you've been listening for a while, you may recall a few episodes I don't know how long it was ago, but we talked about in the 1860s during the Civil War how Kentucky was really, you know, a lot smarter than everybody else and kind of wanted to work through the Civil War, not have the Civil War.
Right.
And you had people like Breckinridge and,
yes,
and Clay, and you have, you know, Cassius Clay as well.
Right.
All these people who were very intelligent and very, mm-hmm, much wanting to have a, you know, civil,
yes, a discussion,
discussion
about it.
Instead,
yeah,
of a war.
Breckinridge was like that too. Mm-hmm. He was not red-headed, red-flared, mm-hmm, Southerner who wanted, mm-hmm, secession and go to fight. He wasn't a John C. Calhoun.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't that type. He,
yeah,
he was. Let's talk about this. He didn't want war.
Yeah, he wasn't a brand.
No, he wasn't a firebrand. He, yeah, really wasn't, and he wanted to try to find a solution to the slavery problem,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which includes sending Africans back to Africa. Mm-hmm. That was part of Clay's and his both.
Wow.
Idea.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, sent back to Liberia,
mm-hmm,
which was named for that. Liberia,
really?
Was named for liberty for slaves. It,
really?
Was an American name. They wanted to start a country where they could send all the black people.
Oh.
It's kind of crazy.
That is kind of crazy. Yeah.
But it was their way of, well, rather than us talk about how, you know, we screwed up enslaving people, you know, let's undo our sin by just sending them all back and clean washing our hands, you know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that would be... you know,
but
I
that was
mean,
the
I'm
way
sure
they. That's
mind,
the way they were
thinking.
In their
thinking,
thought, yeah, let's like, give money. They wanted to vote money from Congress and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. But your son's done a lot of research on.
He has.
Yeah.
He irritates me. He knows so much more than I do. I won't ever admit it. But he's always, you know, giving me in-depth thought things on things I'm supposed to know about.
I ain't that smart, son.
Yeah. That's a problem. I'm telling you, it's a living problem. I talked to him this morning on the way here.
Yeah. Anyway. So Breckinridge, part of me like really gets to me, and you know, being from Kentucky is like, man, yeah, he seems like such a honorable dude.
He was. He really was.
And a smart guy. But
he
then
was.
Like, you know, him being with the Confederacy and whatever, mm-hmm, his reason may be. It puts a negative slight in my
it does
in my
today.
Mind.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, he was part of that bluegrass aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm,
the Clays and the Breckinridge. You know, they were, mm-hmm, well off. They had slaves and servants, and they were from Kentucky, and yet they had that typical Kentucky attitude that was pro-slavery but anti-secession,
mm-hmm,
and that,
mm-hmm,
carried through in our government, mm-hmm, as well.
Yeah. And then, well, you even mentioned him coming back. That, mm-hmm, would then install this more, the pro-Southern...
Mm-hmm. Breckinridge loved horses. And,
yeah,
after he left the Congress and the Know-Nothing Party that he was associated with and philosophy, his last kind of public thing was he was promoted the advancement of horse racing in Kentucky and was chosen president of the Kentucky Association for the Improvement of the Breed of Horses.
Wow. So there you go. And then what happens from there?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I mean,
yeah,
he's an interesting dude. So the O'Hare guy, anything else on him, like, as far as...
He was a colonel in the Confederate Army, mm-hmm, and he wrote a great poem.
Was he pro-slavery?
He probably was.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about him. But,
yeah,
you know, being in the Confederate Army,
yeah,
chances are he was.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, going back to Bragg and Breckinridge's problem... was there was a point where a lot of Confederate troops were deserting, and, mm-hmm, Bragg became very concerned. And there was a private, I think he may have been a Kentuckian, whose enlistment time was up. You know, they enlisted for a year or 90 days or whatever,
yeah,
it was, but his enlist time was up, and he had some children that were sick, and he wanted to go home to visit his wife and children. And so he left and,
mm-hmm,
went home to visit him. His expiration time was up. And he was coming back to rejoin his unit when some of Bragg's officers captured him.
Yeah.
And Bragg, at the staff meeting, said that he had to do something because there were so many people deserting. So he said that he wanted to make example of this private and execute,
yeah,
him in front of all the,
yeah,
troops. Well, Breckinridge just threw a fit. He said the man's not a deserter.
Yeah.
Not at all. So he was coming back and his enlistment time was up. And Bragg insisted on executing him, and Breckinridge defended him.
Mm-hmm,
but,
mm-hmm,
Bragg outranked Breckinridge and said, let's execute him. So he lined him up in front of all the people and executed him. And they said that when that happened, that Breckinridge was so upset that he cried like a baby.
Yeah.
And from then on, he just hated Bragg's guts.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, Bragg was such a jerk, man.
He really was. And he executed the poor guy.
Yeah. And I can only,
Breckinridge had defended him. You know, said, this is wrong. The guy's innocent. And Bragg said, we just need to set somebody up and kill him to scare everybody. And so this poor guy that went, the listing was up, you know, came back and, you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Executed.
That happens all, I guess, many times. And to say in a military setting, a leader or a general getting too egotistical or, you know, treating the soldiers wrong.
Right.
I mean, that happens. If you think that, I see his thinking about, well, I'm going to make an example, but yet, you know, you make an example and that can actually probably scare just as many people away as,
right,
ways you're intending not to. But,
you know, we said that Breckinridge was a well-educated man. One of the neat things, he went to Center College.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Oh,
wow. And he also attended Transylvania University.
Oh, wow.
And he graduated from Princeton.
Whoa.
So, I mean, he was a highly intelligent man.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about Theodore O'Hara. Of course, he lived in Danville, and that's where Center College is.
Yeah.
And Theodore O'Hara also was an alumni of Center College.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Theodore O'Hara led kind of an interesting life. He moved to Columbus, Georgia to work in the cotton business. But he lost his business to a fire, caught on his warehouse and burned everything down, all of his investments. But he's really, even though he was a colonel and served, he also served in the Mexican War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably why he was at the cemetery with Breckinridge.
Mm-hmm.
He had joined and gone there as well. So some of his fellow men had lost to the yellow fever. He was not put in the Lexington, but he was in the historical Frankfort Cemetery.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the Mexican War that... Well, it's interesting how you get, and this is a takeaway, you know, the Mexican-American War happens, and all these soldiers, it was kind of the first, it was probably a lot of these soldiers' first battles, but then along comes the Civil War, and then they're fighting against each other.
Hmm. You know, the famous thing with O'Hara and his poem is that last stanza where it says, on fame's eternal camping ground, their silent tents are spread, and glory guards with solemn round the bivouac of the dead. And he even wrote his own, that was his own epitaph put on his own monument in the Frankfort Cemetery. But because he served in the Confederacy, you know, O'Hara often goes uncredited.
Yeah.
When they use this line, they don't even say who it belongs to, because he, you know, even though they like it.
Yeah. And I can say I don't really agree with why that he wrote the line. I mean, if you're using it, you know, give him credit where he used it. It's not like his line says, you know, slavery was good.
Right.
At the all.
Right. But just like a poet, you know, he's in the cotton business in Columbus, Georgia, and his warehouse burns down. Things that happen. Some people think that he wrote the poem in Mexico during the war rather than after the cemetery, but he was he was certainly moved at the cemetery when Breckinridge gave his talk.
Yeah. And two interesting Kentuckians.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Danville and Breckinridge was from Lexington.
That's right.
Yeah. I wonder if they ever, well, I mean, obviously they crossed paths.
Mm-hmm. O'Hara joined the 12th Alabama Regiment and served with Albert Sidney Johnson. And he also served under John C. Breckinridge.
Yeah, wow.
Who was a fellow law student. They both studied at Center College together.
Well, there you go. So there you go. Mm-hmm. They did have some connection there.
And also, O'Hara was raised in rank and became a hero during the Battle of Shiloh and the Battle of Stones River, which was commanded by Breckinridge.
Wow. Huh.
But he also had conflicts with Braxton Bragg.
His guy's a jerk, isn't he?
And Jefferson Davis, because of Braxton Bragg, messed with O'Hara and tried to get him demoted and everything. Let me tell you something else that's kind of a Kentucky thing about Breckinridge. It made me remember it when you talk about Bragg. Bragg wrote up Breckinridge, and the Battle of Missionary Ridge, things didn't go so well.
Mm-hmm.
So Bragg blamed Breckinridge for being drunk.
Uh-huh.
He said he was always drunk every battle and blamed his losses on Breckinridge every time he would make a stupid mistake.
Yeah.
And Breckinridge was just a typical Kentuckian of that time who sipped bourbon, get up in the morning, have a drink of Kentucky bourbon whiskey. We've talked about the bourbon industry, and maybe at noon too. He liked to have a little, you know, toddy all the time.
Nothing too much.
Clear his throat in his command, clear his head. And it was just a cultural thing.
Yeah,
but Bragg
didn't
like it.
Drunk.
Bragg did not like it.
Yeah.
And no one said that Breckinridge had ever been drunk.
Mm-hmm,
but he did drink bourbon and drank it pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And Bragg hated that.
Yeah.
And said, accused him of being a drunk. And whenever he'd make a mistake, he'd say, oh, it's that drunk Breckinridge.
Drunk Kentuckian.
Yeah, that's right. That's what he did. And, you know, that didn't go over real well. And he did the same thing with the wearer. And he was drunk all the time, too. Because they both sip bourbon together. Isn't that something?
These drunk Kentuckians are...
Yeah, that's right. They had a reputation. They were from Brigade. Yeah, they both did. Hello, Harrow went down and joined Brigade in Alabama just to get away from Bullock County, Alabama, just to get away from Bragg, finally. Yeah.
Got all these drunk Kentuckians.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder, I can't win nothing.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it?
Yeah. He probably wouldn't say that, though, because then... Jefferson Davis was also from Kentucky, and he was kind of the man, I guess, in charge of...
Yeah, but I mean, Jefferson Davis was kind of a wimp.
Yeah.
You know, he favored politically all of his friends, and and he was big buddies with Bragg.
Uh-huh.
I think they served at West Point together. You know, they were both West Pointers.
Yeah.
So whatever his buddy said, he would, you know... Yeah, he was politically oriented. He probably would never do anything with Breckinridge because Breckinridge was so powerful politically and popular.
Yeah.
You know, more popular than Bragg or Davis, really.
Yeah.
Probably envied him, afraid to mess with him.
Mm-hmm. That's probably what Bragg's problem was as well.
Yeah, it probably was. Yeah. Envy, jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a general idiot.
You know. That's
wouldn't
that's
even
low.
Let Breckinridge have a drink. You know, I mean, what the hell?
Come on, man. He's going to battle.
Come on, man.
He's in a carriage.
Clear his head.
He's in a carriage running into battle, leading the charge. Let him have a sip.
I've read where they said many historians that studied Breckinridge and his battles, you know, you don't hear a whole lot about it, but they said that he was second to nobody on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
He made really good decisions about things. He had a clear mind. I guess the bourbon helped him, maybe. I don't know.
There you go.
But they said he had a real clear mind. And, you know, just like when the Confederacy was lost,
he thought it's over, guys.
He took $150,000. He was in charge of the treasury in gold coinage and carried it and deposited it in a bank, you know, for future claims against the Confederacy.
Uh-huh.
And they were on a train with the gold after the South had surrendered. And some of the guards said that they hadn't been paid for 3 months and wanted to take theirs out in gold. And they threatened to kill Breckinridge.
Uh-huh.
So he went back and opened up a chest and said, how much do we owe you, boys? And he paid them off in gold coinage.
Yeah.
And they left and he took the gold onto the bank.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have killed him and taken all the gold.
Yeah. Wow.
And that was another kind of interesting thing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And he another thing, when he surrendered his command... He had, you know how Lee surrendered and got pretty generous terms, you know, from Grant and so forth.
Yeah.
And so when he surrendered, I think he was in Tennessee, and he surrendered the Western Theater Army. And he negotiated with them. They said, well, what you want to surrender? Well, what are your terms? And so he wrote out the terms, which were really favorable to the Confederacy.
Yeah.
And the generals on the Union side said, okay, he convinced all of them to accept it. But Lincoln and Grant, who were in charge, when they saw the generous thing, they said, hell no. Even E. Lincoln, who was known to give the Confederacy, it was like, you know, you all pay us $50 a month for the rest of our life and things like that, you know, to help the boys out. And he said, they deserve it and this, that, and the other. And they went along with it, you know. And he convinced them. And that's really an interesting thing, too. And they did settle for good terms.
Yeah.
But it wasn't his terms. But they said, you tell us what you want. If you want to surrender, what are you thinking of?
Yeah.
And but when they did, he laid it out and they agreed to it. But when it got back to the command center, they said, hell no, we're not paying these people all this money and doing all this stuff to help out the South. He was really clever. I mean, everything he did like that, he won. Every argument, legally, he was just like clay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was brilliant in his mind, thinking. He was well-educated, Princeton, you know, Center College, Transylvania. Those were the great universities of the time, you know, for frontier people.
Mm-hmm.
And Kentucky was a frontier.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And they were just that aristocracy. You know, and his family and generations after John C. Breckinridge, the other Breckinridge, they served nobly history. You know, started his Breckenridge started the same family, started the Frontier Nurses, you know, in Eastern Kentucky and different
things. Was it his daughter or his granddaughter?
I'm not sure. Ask me questions. I'm not sure. But that Breckenridge name has just continued, you know,
throughout time. Yep.
And associated with Eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I noticed you shared with me some email we got. I was wondering to ask you how the Dolly Parton, John Fee was going, whether we had more for Dolly Parton or more for John Fee. I hadn't heard yet. But I know you did share some folks that had been listening to us, and one in particular from Eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they wrote about how proud they were of Harlan County, I believe it was, and how we had mentioned Harlan County.
Not County.
And how we had mentioned that, and how that, you know, they said a heart-pouring thing about how Eastern Kentucky meant everything to them, mm-hmm, and they were so proud of it, and they wanted to hear more history from Eastern Kentucky, that it was their home, and, you know, it just made them teary-eyed, you know, to hear stories about that comes from their region. And, you know, I don't know that we wouldn't get one from Central Kentucky, the bluegrass. You know, they just accept their royalty, you know, and their ambiance that they have, you know, that they're better than everybody else, you know. But the little folks up in Eastern Kentucky, I don't really call them little, but they love Eastern Kentucky, and it's really heartfelt, and the culture there. And yet, you know, the big, powerful bluegrass, you know, it just, oh, well, so everybody knows we're great, you know. But, you know, it's interesting, the attitudes within our state.
It is.
And we're talking about today. You know, this topic about history, you know, and that's, people are listening to this podcast, if you, you know, as we stumble along and talk about different things.
Hopefully you're following us.
You know, we may not be, but hopefully you are. we're sitting here talking, and I guess you can tell that we don't have written scripts. You know, we're just talking off the top of our head. That's why we jump from one thing to another oftentimes. But I think maybe the public might enjoy that or appreciate that, that we're not as complete morons as we sound like and seem sometimes. Close to it, but not complete. But, I forgot what I was going to say. As we live today, history, you know, we're interpreting history. I see these things on national TV. I said, why don't history teachers teach history? You know, I taught history. But now they're saying, why don't you teach the real history? And I go, well, what is real history? And like, people are looking at history and they're redefining it. You know, what's important, who's important. I mean, we've gone for 100 years with Jefferson Davis and John Hunt Morgan and John C. Breckinridge statues, and you know, many of us honored them and were proud of them in our home. And every little county in Kentucky's got a Civil War soldier. And we were so proud to see that in our heritage. And we were able to live peacefully with history, saying, well, yeah, we did have people that served that were Confederates here in Kentucky, da-da-da-da-da. But now it's like a sin. And a lot of people have trouble with that. And yet at the same time, the Confederate flag, the racist people, you know, they've painted things bad. And we've got to deal with it. But and so in total, we're reinterpreting history, and we're saying all those people we thought were so good really aren't so good anymore, and they don't deserve to be honored. You know, and I'm sure John C. Breckinridge has become one of them. One of Kentucky's greatest heroes is now not even worth mentioning. And if we wrote a modern day history book, we might even leave him out or mention him just at the bottom of a page in a in a sub recognition. So isn't that interesting?
It is.
You know, it's just really, what are the new history books going to look like? What is, you know, I thought history was something that was concrete, that was solid, you know, that it true or false, it happened or it didn't happen. You know?
Well, are we going to see a history book without Breckinridge, but with John Fee? You know, what are we going to say? You know,
I know. It's interesting.
It's very interesting.
How are we going to define these people? They did exist. You know, and what about Christopher Columbus? I mean, the Native American thing. I mean, you know, he's not a hero anymore. It's the saddest day in history for Native Americans to recognize Columbus Day. I'm sure it won't even be a holiday if it already hadn't been taken away. And maybe he doesn't deserve it. Maybe we've looked at history. Maybe we've all been wrong. You know? I mean, it's hard for some people to grasp, especially older people. They say, well, hell, I've taught history. You know, I was taught that, you know. this ain't right. But it is right when we re-examine things mm-hmm. and think afresh. Mm-hmm. And it is right when we have certain institutions that are causing people to, you know, rise up, you know, like the rebel flag, Confederate flag. I mean, that's now a symbol of hate and white supremacy. It wasn't mm-hmm. always that way, I don't think. It was never presented that way. Mm-hmm. But it is now.
Yeah.
So we've got to recognize that, you know, be modern, move with the flow, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
We ended on that.
We ended on that. All right. Well, there we go. The poet and the general, was it general?
Yes.
General?
Yes.
All right. Well, we will end it on that. On a positive note, the dog was behaved.
Yeah, you got a dog in your lap the whole time. I've been watching it while I'm talking.
Yeah, I did a snore a little bit.
Dog, little puppy. I heard him snoring.
Yeah. So,
I'm just glad it wasn't you.
And if you are snoring out there, yeah. Listening, wake up, please.
Wake up.
Oh, please. Yeah. If you want to connect with us, you can connect to us at KYHistoryPod on Twitter or Facebook, The Land Between the Meadows at gmail.com for an email. And what have we got next? Maybe some. Maybe we need to talk about another Clay or something.
There's so many people in history that we haven't touched here. Kentucky history.
We got plenty.
Yeah.
So stick around. We got plenty more coming.
But, you know, the thing is, are we going to be careful about who we talk about? I mean are we going to talk about people who are rising in popularity because mm-hmm. of the current mm-hmm. cultural wars that we're having in America? Or are we going to talk about some of the old boys that, you know, that everybody assumes are good old boys?
I think we just need to do an episode about Braxton Bragg, the jerk.
Oh, gosh. I think we should, too. I really do. He is a jerk. He really is a jerk. I think that would be good. Just all negative. Let's try to do that.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.